Welcome to another episode. I'm Lena.
And I'm Yuna.
And you're listening to Blind Girl Chat,
where we talk all things blind and all things girl, no vision required. All right, what are we talking about today?
So today we're talking about ableism and...
Bum, bum, bum.
And the mental health effects it can have on us, and also how to handle it when it does, but also I think how to kind of recover from it after it happens, because I don't think we often talk about the lasting impact.
Yeah, I think that experiencing any sort of ism on a daily basis, which, like, if you're blind, you do experience on a daily basis.
On a daily time, basis, right? Yeah.
We never talk about how that impacts mental health in such a profound way, because a lot of the time we're talking about how it impacts other things in your life, like how it impacts your compensation at work and like what jobs you get and what grades you get and all these things, which are also very important and very concrete. But I think the mental health benefits, the mental health detriments are actually more profound a lot of the time than even the stuff like getting paid less at work can be.
Oh, yeah. I think we've mentioned this before in other episodes, or I don't know, maybe we haven't, but basically I've read this in my research that I've done, because I've done research on ableism for school.
Yeah.
And there was this article that I read, which I think we can both relate to or like agree with, where it said that ableism is the unspoken ism, or like, because racism and sexism are all talked about a lot. And they're all very well known.
Yes. It's so true. Nobody talks about ableism.
Yeah. And like the impacts of racism and sexism and classism and all the other isms basically are very well known and documented and everything. And nobody really talks about ableism when it comes to, yeah, the impact of it. Or even just in general, I feel like there's so much more literature on all the other isms and not on ableism. So
classic.
Yeah, classic.
There's just no literature ever on anything disability related. But, okay, what are some of the times in your life when you feel like you've experienced ableism?
Okay, so like we said, I think we probably both experience this pretty regularly. And wait, before I talk about the times in my life where I've experienced it, I also want to say that this episode is not meant to inspire pity. Or sympathy. Yeah.
No.
I think that that is also something about ableism that can be really challenging, is that I've found anyways that I have to be very careful with whom I talk about it with.
Yeah.
Or sorry, with whom I talk about it. And also I have to be really careful about how I frame it, or like what I say about it in terms of how it made me feel or things like that, because it can quickly make a sighted person especially become very pitying, and then it totally ruins what I'm trying to get across.
Yeah, we're trying to say we're not just here to complain.
Yeah, we're not just here to complain.
But I think it's useful to have concrete examples, because ableism is not what people think it is. It's not people in the street being like, ha ha ha, you're blind, loser. Like... It's never going to be like that, right? And I think people,
I mean, sometimes it might be.
The very minority, super small minority of cases, it's going to be like that. But I don't think people understand when they are either creating ableism or when we would experience it, because it is so subtle and it is so pervasive, which is why I think it's useful to go through these examples.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time when you experience ableism, the other person is not trying to be ableist. They're not trying to make you feel bad. And so that's why I think we're trying to illustrate
that. Basically, I think this is meant to draw awareness, like to raise awareness and to talk about how to...
navigate it.
How to navigate it and self-care after it happens, because honestly, it can be really challenging.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to the examples. Basically...
Yeah, now let's complain. I'm just kidding. My turn to complain.
Let's vent. Yeah.
Everybody, vending session, rant time.
I think... I'm trying to think of times where it was especially frustrating or had a particularly...
You're saying it's hard to pick one because there's just so many.
A particularly lasting impact on my life.
Yeah.
Which, again, I know this isn't, it's not to say this is the end of the world or anything, but it was just particularly frustrating to me. And so one thing that comes to mind was that a couple years ago when my boyfriend and I were getting ready to move in together, we were looking for apartments and I have a service dog. And so I was a little bit nervous about the process because I had had bad experiences in the past with landlords and them not being okay with my service dog. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely something I was keeping in mind, but we saw this apartment and it was perfect. It was literally our dream apartment. It had everything we wanted and we loved it. Like, we loved it and we were so excited to apply for it, but it said animals negotiable. Like, it said pets negotiable or something. But then when we were talking to the landlord or the real estate agent, she said that the landlords didn't want dogs and that they had already denied somebody their application because they had two dogs. Mm-hmm. So then that kind of raised a red flag for me. And I was like, ooh, like, what do I do? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to, like, I felt like it would be a bad idea to lie to them and not tell them I had a dog. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I was really afraid to tell them I had a dog. And by the way, guide dogs and service dogs are protected by law. So even if an apartment is not pet friendly, they technically have to take them. Mm-hmm. But people don't always follow that. And so, long story short, I told the real estate agent I had a service dog. And she was like, okay, yeah, you know, I'll explain it to the landlords and everything. But, okay, when we went to the open house, I didn't take my dog with me. And I had my cane. She saw me with my cane. The apartment had a basement. And we went down to the basement. It was totally fine to go up and down the stairs, obviously. Mm-hmm. But then when I told her I had a service dog, she was like, yeah, I'll explain it to them. But also, they might just be a little bit nervous because you're blind and there are stairs or whatever. And my boyfriend and I were like, well, that's not an issue at all. Like, we went down to the basement and it was fine and everything. Anyways, long story short, we did not get the apartment, and the real estate agent texted me and specifically said, she didn't say that it was because of my service dog, but she was like, the landlord said no because they don't want to have this liability of, like, you falling down the stairs. Or, like, basically it was like, yeah, they didn't want a person with a disability living in their apartment because there were stairs. And
insanity.
It was crushing. I was so sad. I think I'm pretty well adjusted to experiencing ableism. And so usually I really don't think that I let it get to me.
Yeah.
But I think in that moment, I was so angry because I had, and again, like, I had experienced ableism with getting apartments before, but it had never been an apartment that I was particularly set on.
Yeah.
But this apartment was just so perfect. And I felt like there was no other reason for us to not get it. And so it was just really disappointing. And also, I felt really bad. I felt guilty, like, embarrassed for my boyfriend because I was like, he's missing out on it because of me now.
Yeah.
And I think that I think that there was a little bit of fear because I think that was the first time that he had experienced ableism with me or kind of gotten a taste of what life with me would be like.
Yeah.
And it was scary. Like, I was like, you know, what if he doesn't want to deal with this shit? Like, I can deal with it for myself. It's fine. But I think that because he was involved, it made it particularly devastating.
Yeah. And how did he respond? Like, was he shocked?
Oh, yeah. He was shocked. He was so angry. And I was just so angry and sad. Like, I remember I cried. Like, I sobbed. I was really upset. And again, I think we told people and people didn't really understand how upsetting it was. Like, they were like, oh yeah, like, you'll get the next one, you know, like, because people don't get apartments all the time. But I think
the reason
was so unfair. I think it like makes you so angry because you feel like this injustice is being done.
Yeah.
And so it was just really, really difficult and sad. And honestly, it was really a bummer too because I typically really enjoy looking at apartments. Like, I love going apartment hunting. I just love looking at different ones and everything.
Yeah.
But after that, it just like filled me with anxiety. Mm-hmm. And even now, we're actually getting ready to look for apartments again. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm just like, honestly, like, at this point, we're just like, we're just going to look for pet friendly from now on because I just don't want to. I don't want to experience that anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And that does have a really lasting impact because you have to live somewhere completely different.
Yeah, so we had to live somewhere completely different. And we do like, we like our apartment a lot and everything, but for some reason it was just kind of like, it was like that, the other apartment was like the one that got away.
Yes,
like
I was, yes, like, totally.
But it's not the other
totally,
one.
Totally, totally. I felt the same way about my apartment. I didn't get denied. Yeah. I got denied my apartment, I think, because I had a piano. But we came back to them a month later and it was still available. And I reapplied and I asked the new real estate agent, like, wait, why are they not giving it to us? And they said it's because you have a piano. And I was like, I promise not to practice after 9 p.m. and I'll be so quiet. I'll give everybody my number. And if they want to text me, I'll stop. Like, there are all these things. And so we eventually got it. But the month where I didn't have it, I was like, that was the perfect apartment. And let me tell you, it was not the perfect apartment. Now that I've been there, there's so many problems. But when I didn't have it, I was like, it's the ideal apartment. And I'll never be happy now. But yeah, no, I mean, that is an example of ableism that is literally illegal.
Like, it's illegal, yeah.
You could sue for something like that. It's discrimination. It's against the ADA.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a very, very outright, just black and white case of ableism. And honestly, it's shocking to me that they would even voice that to you, because that would put them in legal jeopardy.
Yeah, I don't think she realized that, which, by the way, I did take legal action.
Oh, you did?
That. Yeah, I did.
Oh,
didn't
my God.
I tell you that?
No.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that in like a later episode or something.
Wait, but did it turn out good? Like, what happened?
Literally nothing has happened yet because we're still waiting. Like, that's the thing, is that then the legal stuff takes forever.
It does.
But
it does.
Yeah, I had concrete proof. Like, I literally sent a screenshot of the text message.
Oh my God, good for you.
She
is so stupid for texting that. I mean, she's stupid for saying it, but like, the stupidity you have to have for texting something like that is just outrageous. Yeah. Anyways.
But I just also wanted to say that I know we've talked about this, or I don't know. Again, I honestly forget.
We forget.
What we've talked about on a podcast versus what we've talked about on our phone calls.
Yeah.
But I remember talking about it with my sister or something and, you know, crying to her on the phone and being like, what do I have to do to prove to people that, you know, that I'm a normal person or whatever? Because of the whole, like, stare thing, like, I was like, that's such, like, you know, that's such BS, because I even told the real estate agent, I was like, I've lived in so many apartments and I've never lived on the first floor.
Yeah.
Like, all my apartments have been up, like, windy, narrow, you know, Boston stairs that are so, you know, just, they're not like your typical stairs. So I was like, so why is it even a question? And yeah, it was just so discouraging. But anyways, tell us about one of your incidences.
Okay, I have a couple I can pick from that just came to mind immediately. Number one, I think that really, really upset me was 2 years ago, I did an internship as a strength and conditioning intern at a D1 school. And basically, you're helping to train the athletes. And I was really excited. I've been obsessed with weightlifting for like 7 years now. And so I was really, really excited to be able to help athletes with weightlifting, because I was like, okay, athletes take weightlifting seriously. This will be so cool to be actually helping them lift, whatever. So I get to the place and I was very upfront about being blind from the very beginning, and the kind of accommodations I would need. And they had actually had a blind intern previously, which usually
is a good thing.
Is a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. Usually if someone paves the way before you, people are a lot better about not being ableist. And long story short, I just started to notice pretty immediately that I was being treated differently than everybody else. So, for example, there was kind of certain teams that were known for being more serious, like, you know, the men's baseball team, the men's lacrosse team, they're going to be obviously lifting a lot more. Their lifts are a lot more important. Then there was other teams like the sailing team. No offense to sailors. You guys are so cool. But their lifts were not required. So the people that showed up, they were just showing up for fun, basically, right? And we were specifically given instructions that, like, oh, guys, the most important thing in the sailing team is that we just make it a fun workout, because, like, they don't have to be here. So, like, it's not that big of a deal. Da-da-da. And so I just noticed that I was always given these teams that people just thought of as not very serious. And I started to get annoyed. And then I also started to notice that when we had to supervise things, I always had to supervise the things that didn't really need supervising. Like, for example, even the warm-ups, like, I was barely ever given the responsibility to lead warm-ups. And it was basically, I was given the easiest tasks, right? That's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really being treated like everyone else. And I just remember being upset by it, and especially being upset because there was this humiliating moment every morning where we would all get assigned the teams, And it was just very obvious that the teams that everybody thought of as the easier teams or teams that didn't really lift that seriously, it was very obvious that I was being assigned those teams every single day, whereas everybody else was rotating around me. And it was very embarrassing because it would happen in front of all the other interns. I was one of the oldest interns there. Everybody else is kind of like in college or out of college. I was like 26, 27. And that was humiliating. And then it really got me when I was assigned to work with this 19-year-old girl. We had both been assigned to work with a more serious team, the water polo team. And we had to set up like the squat racks and the benches and things. And the coach told us what we had to do. And I asked this girl, what do you want me to do? And she said, oh, no, it's fine. I'll just do it. And I just knew that it was because I couldn't see. And I just got so angry in the moment because I was like,
sorry, that's so funny.
19-year-old little twerp is like, dares tell me like I can't. I was just so angry. And so like I was just stewing in my anger for like a day. And I just don't know why like that moment made me so mad, because I knew the coaches had started it. Like it had come from the top. They had seen, the other interns had seen the way I was being treated by the coaches. So they had set the example. So on the one hand, I was kind of like, well, you can't blame her. She's only 19 years old and she's seen the way I'm being treated and she's acting accordingly. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there were other interns that saw the same thing and did not treat me differently. And it just made me so angry that this girl wouldn't let me help her. And we were getting yelled at for being too slow. And it was in front of the head coach that he was seeing. I wasn't doing anything. This girl was doing everything. And I asked her what I could do and she wouldn't let me do anything. Anyways, it was very, very upsetting. And so the next day I did confront her, which is something I would have never done previously, and said like, did you say that because I can't see? And she said, oh, no, I just didn't know if we could both do it at the same time. And I was like, girl, I'm sorry, but that's BS. There was 7 squat racks we had to set up. You could have done 3. I could have done 4 or whatever. We could have split them up. There's no way you could have done all 7 at the same time. It would have taken you 2 seconds to show me how to do this. And then I could have done them. And in the future, I would just prefer if you say it to my face, I don't know if you can do this. It might be too visual. Can you? And ask me. Or if you show me how to do things instead of just assuming I can't and then lying to me about why you don't need help. Like, that was very demeaning.
Yeah.
Anyways, don't really know if anything changed, because honestly, I left that internship 4 or 5 weeks in. I just couldn't handle it anymore. And this is kind of relating to the mental health aspect, is that that was the first time in a long time where I was being, I don't know even how to describe this feeling, but I was being made to feel like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Or like I was so stupid for 7 hours a day, every day. And it really was wearing me down, because get back to my apartment and have to do my real job. I mean, this internship was like 5 a.m. to 2 p.m. every day.
And like not paid.
Not paid.
Yeah.
And I would get home and then I'd have to do my real job. And I would just feel so down about myself and about my abilities and the way I'd been treated, because it's exhausting all day to be proving yourself to people, like to be volunteering for things. Who wants to? I'll set it up. I'll go do this. Can I help with that? Can I do it? All these things all day long, because I just wanted these people to treat me normally.
And then people say no, so and it people doesn't even go no. anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm volunteering my time to do this and being embarrassed in front of people every day with the way you were being treated. And I would get home and just like not want to do my regular job, not want to go to the gym, not want to talk to my friends. And so anyways, 4 or 5 weeks in, I decided like, this is not what I want to do. I've tried it. I don't want to be a strength and conditioning coach. It's pretty obvious to me and there's no reason I have to deal with this. And that was really hard, because I haven't really quit things before ever because they've gotten difficult or whatever. But this was really like, this is not worth whatever mental health toll it's taking. I'm really not getting anything out of this anymore. And so I did leave, and I didn't tell them that's why I left. And that's honestly a big regret of mine, is that I wish I had written a letter or said to them or something that like, the reason I'm leaving is because the way I was treated here made me feel horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And when I asked previously, what did the other blind intern do? Because I was curious, about a weekend or something, I was like, this is not, I am not being treated equally here. And so I thought to ask the guy, hey, you know, the other person you said that was blind that worked here, what did they do? And he said, oh, well, you know, mostly they were observing, and this person was totally blind. And I said, how was a totally blind person, quote, observing? Like, yeah. Are they feeling the athletes? Like, what are you talking about? Like, it was just so good. It was like, wait, they did nothing.
Yes.
They did nothing.
They did nothing, yeah. Which is really sad.
It is really sad. And I'm sure they also had to waste their own time there every day, 5 a.m. to 2 p.m., doing nothing to just put on their resume they did this internship. So, anyways, that's a really infuriating incident, and it was pretty recent. And I think me and you have talked about this. I think we've both structured our daily lives in such a way that we don't experience egregious ableism on a daily basis a lot of the time because we're in familiar places and we talk to people that are more respectful or that have gotten to know us and don't treat us that way. And so when I go back to unfamiliar settings where nobody knows me and I get treated like that again, it just reminds me of all the years of like having to start over every year in school with new teachers and new students and having to redo this over again of like, please don't treat me differently. Please be normal. Please don't give me less work because you think I can't do things. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's just honestly very, very exhausting.
It's so exhausting.
Yeah. In school, one time we got randomly assigned partners for a geometry project. And keep in mind, in school, I was a huge know-it-all. I was very annoying. I would raise my hand for every question because I constantly felt the need to prove that I was smart to people because I knew they were assuming I was stupid. And so I was very vocal in all my classes. And we got randomly assigned partners. And I got assigned to work with this guy. And he went to his lunch table later that day and said to the lunch table, "Oh, guys, I got assigned to work with Yuna. I don't even know. Can she even use the computer? I'm probably going to have to do the whole project myself." And little did he know, my best friend was sitting with him at lunch. We had different lunches, so I couldn't sit with her at lunch. Anyways, she was at the table and she told me. And so that instilled a fury in me. Like, I was so angry. I did the entire project that day, came in the next day and put it on his desk and said, "Yeah, I did the whole project here." And that was that. And he knew that I had found out, people had told him later anyways, but I remember like we never talked about it ever again, but like stuff like that would happen all the time. And I think my response was always just so angry. Mm-hmm. And I would do extra work basically to make people treat me differently. And still a lot of the time it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I think we should also talk about the guilt that I think we both feel sometimes about not wanting to make people feel bad for being ableist, because that's another part of dealing with ableism.
Yeah, absolutely. There have been many times where I've encountered ableism and then I didn't know what to do about it or how to handle it because I didn't want to be mean.
You don't want to be like a blind curmudgeon.
Yeah, because that mean obviously
blind person.
Yeah.
Hurt my feelings. That mean blindy over there. So mean.
Obviously, you don't want to be mean, but I think there's also something deeply wrong with that.
Yeah, they're being mean. I'm sorry.
Yes. I think that we are socialized, or at least I feel like maybe you and I have been socialized from like when we were kids, that, you know, people are trying to be nice. And so we can't, like, it's wrong for us to say that something is making us uncomfortable or something. And I feel like for a long time, I had this idea that I had to be uncomfortable in order to spare somebody else's feelings so that they're not uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been like through like years of therapy that I've realized that I do that and been like, why do I do that? Like, why is my discomfort okay, but theirs isn't, kind of thing? When like when they're doing something that's mean, and even if they don't know it, like I can understand that people might not realize that it's mean. But I think that it kind of does them a disservice to not educate them about that. Because then they're just going to keep doing it. And then it's just going to keep on making me uncomfortable. And you know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And so now I've been trying to be more honest with people about how things are making me feel like they're being ableist towards me or whatever. But I think that then there is this issue of people still kind of saying like, well, they're just being nice. Like, you shouldn't be offended by that. You know, they're just being nice. Yeah. Like, they don't mean to, you know, be mean or whatever. And it's like, I
who
know that.
Who means to be mean? Yeah, that's like, my question.
Like, I'm not saying that they mean to be, but it's still, it's like kind of ignoring the fact that, you know, that it's making me uncomfortable. And so,
can I just say, who means to be racist? I'm sure there are some people in this country that do mean to be racist, but the vast majority of people that are racist, they don't mean to be racist. People don't mean to be sexist. So I don't understand why with ableism, it's like, they don't mean it that way. Don't take it that way. It's like, it doesn't matter how they mean it or whatever. It's like, it matters what they're saying and they need to know that what they're saying is wrong.
And then it makes it our fault. Like it makes it the fault of the person who's, you know, being discriminated against, because then it's like, oh, you're being too sensitive or like you're taking it the wrong way or whatever. And it's like, yeah, I think it's just really unhelpful. And so I wanted to ask you to tell your story about the whole gym situation, because I feel like that kind of illustrates it really well.
Yeah. Okay. You guys buckle in. This is a crazy story. So this is an example of how not to handle ableism. Just to pre-warn everybody about the story. All right. I go to a gym. I've been going there for a long time, like 4 years now. And there's a person there who works at the desk, and this started, I'd say last year or so. When I would come in, they thought it was a really funny joke to say to the other people at the desk, shh, pretend you're not here, as a joke, like in a stage whisper, to basically, quote, hide from me so that I wouldn't linger and chat at the desk. In case you can't tell, I never stop talking. I'm a very chatty person, and I understand it can be very annoying for not my friends at the desk, because my friends love talking to me, but like for other people at the desk that aren't my friends, I'm sure it's annoying to them that I linger at the desk and chat with everybody. But I will say, it's not just on me, because other people chat to me, okay? I'm just reciprocating. But anyways, I digress. This is just like a joke they're making, like shh, pretend you're not here, ha ha ha. I don't know what it is. People hiding from me is like truly one of the things that
it's so mean.
It's one of the most offensive things to
yes
me. And I do
to
not
a blind person, that's terrible.
I don't get offended easily. Like, I do make blind jokes all the time. I have a great sense of humor about it. Hiding from me is something I do not tolerate from anyone. I think my sisters have maybe done it once to me, and I was so angry with them, and I was like, I don't like this, that's not funny, don't ever do that again. And it was never done again. Like, and anyways, I was just so upset because
they're hiding in plain, like, they're not actually hiding, too, right? Like, it's like, they're,
they're not, exactly. And so, this hadn't been done to me, honestly, in elementary school. Nobody had done this to me. In middle school, in high school, in college, at summer camps, nobody had ever done this to me. And so, the fact that it was, like, this grown adult having this ha-ha funny joke, and the fact that he was bringing other people into it, and I felt so embarrassed, and he's higher up than a lot of these people in the terms of the power structure. And so I knew they felt very uncomfortable. They did not feel like they could confront him about it because he's above them. And I didn't know what to do. And I had talked to a couple people about what to do. I talked to you, and I think you had said that I should tell him, like, this is inappropriate, and or send an email and say this is inappropriate. And all my rational friends said this. I was like, I don't want to be appropriate. I want to be petty as hell. I want to do something so petty because he's being petty. Anyways, you guys, never do that. Anyways, okay. I thought of all these things I could do. Like, I was going to go in one day and say something like, start talking about him in front of him and say, oh my God, I didn't even see you there. You were so quiet. And, you know, say something sarcastic like that, whatever. I was thinking of all these scenarios to do. Long story short, you guys, wrong tactic. I decide to post a TikTok video about this. So I go on TikTok. I like record this video. Oh my gosh. You know, this guy at the gym is doing XYZ. And, you know, the comments are like outraged on my behalf. Oh my God, how could this person do this? This is so rude. Da, 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 da. What gym do you go to? Blah, blah, blah. All these things. And long story short, I didn't think he would ever see this video because he doesn't have TikTok and he's like an older man. And so I'm like, you know, how is an older man ever going to find out about this TikTok? He does find out about the TikTok. And turns out everybody at the gym knows about the TikTok. Everybody's seen it. He starts treating me completely the opposite. Like, I'll come in and be like, Yuna, oh my gosh, so glad you're here. What are you training today? Wow, you're so strong. Oh my gosh, I love your handstands. You're so good at handstands. Like, all these, and it made me feel so much worse again. Like, I was like, this is not making me feel better. And I had to talk to one of the other staff and be like, can you please tell him to just treat me normally? Because I know he's seen the video and he's gone to the opposite extreme now. And long story short, it was definitely the wrong tactic to post the video. But was most upsetting about this whole situation was not just the way this man treated me. It was that afterwards, when I talked to my other friends that worked at this gym, the most common response I got from them was, look, like, that's not how he meant it. You're just misinterpreting how he meant it. And I understand why you would be upset if that's how he meant it, but it's not. We do this joke to tons of people that walk and we say, shh, stop talking about them. They're coming in. And I was kept telling them over and over, that's not the joke he made. He said, shh, pretend you're not here. That's clearly a hiding from a blind person joke, not like a stop talking about this person joke, right? And so I just hadn't really experienced this phenomenon that I think a lot of minorities experience of when you say something is sexist, when you say something is sexual assault or sexual harassment, when you say something is racist, people gaslighting you and saying, no, 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 that's not how they meant it. You're misinterpreting it. And like, at the end of the day, you have never lived a day in my life as a blind person. Like, you do not understand the types of jokes people make and the way people treat you. And both of those people that had said these things had never been, both of them had been there once at the desk when he had done this. He had done this to me like 10 or 12 times at this point when I had finally posted the video. And they had each been there once. And I'm like, told both of them to their face, like, you were there one time and maybe you're misremembering because he does say that joke to other people. I was there 12 times when he did this. And the other staff that have been there 12 times aren't saying what you're saying. And it was so upsetting to me that the people that were quote unquote my friends were the people that were gaslighting me so much and telling me that's not the way he meant it. So long story short, I wish I had taken the high road and just sent an email or talked to him about it. But honestly, the reason I didn't want to is exactly what we were saying. First of all, I didn't want to be seen as mean. And second of all, I didn't want to be seen as a baby who can't take a joke. Because we all joke around the gym all the time. Like, I'm one of the biggest culprits of having relationships with people where we're very joking, we banter, we tease each other, we make fun of each other all the time, and it's all ha-ha fun and games. And so I didn't want to be, you know, say to him, hey, that's not really funny, and have everybody go, oh, okay, guess we have to tiptoe around you now. Guess we can't make jokes anymore, da-da-da, you know, the typical response whenever a comedian, you know,
like
whenever...
Overcompensating.
Like, whenever a new comedian comes out with a new special nowadays and people get upset about a really, like, inappropriate joke they tell, you know, the comedian goes, oh, I guess you can't make jokes about anything anymore with these days with these special snowflakes. I just didn't want to be seen as a special snowflake who was getting upset for no reason, right? And so I thought I'd be, oh my gosh, I'll post this video. It'll do super well on TikTok. He'll never see it. I'll just get a bunch of views. Ha ha ha. It'll all be jokes and fun and whatever. And that's not the way it turned out. But long story short, I really wish that I had just confronted him about it. And I don't know. I guess at the end of the day, I don't think you're being a special snowflake by telling somebody that what they're doing is wrong. Because especially when I had so many people in the comments validate that this was inappropriate, because I thought maybe I'm just overreacting. Maybe because I'm sensitive about this, it's not that big of a deal. But when I told my friends about it too, they said, this is like embarrassing for a man in his 50s to be acting this way. And especially when you've been going to this gym for 4 years and you're like a valued customer, for somebody to be treating you this way is just inappropriate. I mean, obviously they shouldn't be at all, but in that context, it's even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So... wow, what an uplifting episode.
I know. So to transition into kind of the mental health impact of these experiences that we've had, talk about how that made you feel. So I know you said you were, you know, really disappointed. You felt really hurt by the people that you're with. But, and I know you mentioned too with your story about the internship that it really just like made you feel really depressed.
Yeah.
So tell me more about that. Like, what did you do to feel better?
Yeah. Okay. Part of the reason why this gym incident was so important, I guess, or had such an impact on me is because part of the way I do feel better in these instances is by going to the gym. Like, the way that I feel better when I experience ableism, because there's so many, I mean, it's not just ableism. There's just like a lot of things that can make you feel lesser than when you're navigating your life with a disability because of the way other people treat you. And so the way I feel better is by doing the other things in my life that make me feel strong and capable, and hanging out with my friends who I know don't see me as lesser than. And all of those things combined, like, I feel like they all like build me up. And then, you know, you go to these things and they like, they knock you down a little bit, and then you have to go into the rest of your life and build yourself back up. And so a big way of how I do that is going to the gym and working out and feeling stronger. And so that was another reason why it was so difficult, was because now this place that was like really one of my safe places and one of the places that I really use to make myself feel better and to improve my mental health was being tainted by all this. I will say, I feel like it's really calmed down and he is treating me normally. And honestly, the next step for me is that I actually do want to talk to the two people who said that he didn't mean it that way to them and say that I found it very hurtful that you didn't take what I said seriously and that you just tried to convince me that's not the way he meant it.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that I do really want to do because I feel like both of them were like, you should have just talked to him about it if you didn't like it. And I'm like, all right, fine. You want me to talk about it? Fine. I'll talk to you about what you did that I didn't like. Anyways, so that is something I want to do. But yeah, I do think when it comes to it, it makes you feel very down, lesser than, and I think depressed. It's a really big mental health effect. Mm-hmm. And I cope with it by doing the things that make me feel strong in the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think that that is why it's really hard when I feel like ableist things happen in a context where I'm supposed to feel better. So if it happens in the running group,
mm-hmm.
I'm in, or even like with family, friends, or people that have known me my whole life, ironically, that does not mean they're not ableist.
Ironically, yeah, right?
And I think that that is particularly hurtful because it's like, but you've known me forever. Like, what do I have to do? And I think that that is then where the depression kicks in, where it's like, then it's like,
There's nothing I can do.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, oh my God. Like, I feel like I've done so many things in my life to be taken seriously or just like seen as like a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing I ever do is ever going to change that. And I think that sometimes if I just sit with that, I'm like, oh, God, like, what's the point of anything?
Yeah,
like,
no, it's so true.
Like, it
it's
can so get true. So depressing.
Like, it's never enough. Nothing never is ever enough, enough to convince people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if you're a blind person out there, please do not let that depress you. Because I think that our job in life is to educate people about it. And I know that, that that's not necessarily what we want or what we signed up for or whatever. And I get that. And sometimes it gets really exhausting. But I like to think that that we do educate people with these interactions and everything. And so hopefully it will lessen over time or they won't be ableist to other people. And that, I think that really gets me, you know, gets me through it, just thinking that that it's like I'm helping to change this. But yeah, I think for me, talking about it makes a really big difference because keeping that inside, like the anger and the depression, just like is really difficult. I think for me, like I just get really, really angry about it. I get really upset.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for me to keep that internally. Like I have to express it somehow. So whether it's writing about it or talking about it. And again, I think when you talk about it, you have to be very careful who you talk about it with.
Yeah.
But I know we talk about it. We talk about these things a lot and everything. And just people that I know will understand and help validate me, who won't invalidate me.
Yeah.
Is really important.
And also the fact that you have another blind friend who like understands how these things happen. Because that's also really, really helpful. I know, I don't remember what it was recently, but remember we talked about something and I think it actually was the gym incident. And my sisters were like, why did you post that TikTok video? Why did you like respond in such a, you know, such a haughty way? You should have thought about it more. You should have been more measured. And I was like, honestly, I don't think you have the right to give me advice on these things because the way I reacted like that, that's because I've had 1,000 incidences like this and I just had enough and I didn't want to be the bigger person in this incident.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really helps that when I talk to you, like there are things that you've told me before where if you bring it up to your sister or to someone else who's sighted, they'll say, oh no, like that wasn't them trying to be ableist. That's just them asking you a question or whatever. And it's just, they don't understand because they don't have to deal with these questions 24/7 all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really useful to have somebody else who might be going through a similar experience to talk about it with, because they're always going to understand the nuances of the way people are talking to you a lot more than somebody who doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then on the note of you saying people do change and we educate, I think I've seen that so many times in my life. Like when I first went to gymnastics class and I said I wanted to do a backflip, the gymnastics coach told me months later, he's like, oh yeah, when you first came in, I thought you were crazy. And now I totally think it's doable. And I was like, okay, that happens all the time. Like anytime mm-hmm. you go and do anything,
mm-hmm.
people change their mind and they change their opinion.
Yeah.
And you change that person for the rest of their lives. Like, the next time that person encounters a blind person, they're not going to treat them the same way. So mm-hmm. as difficult as it is to go into new spaces and to have to be the pioneer in a lot of these places, you are making the world a better place for the next person that comes after you. Like, yeah. I was the first blind pianist at my music school. They didn't accept me into my music school when I tried out when I was 11 years old because I was blind. And my teacher, who I eventually had for 6 years, the only reason I got in is because she told them, I've had a blind student before, please let me take her. Because they said, a person cannot be a pianist if they're blind because they can't read music. And my teacher said, no, there's Braille music and she can be a pianist. And by the time I graduated, so many teachers had come and apologized to me and said, I'm so sorry that I underestimated you. I'm so sorry I didn't let you into the music school earlier. Like, I was wrong. And anyways, these are just a few examples, but that happens all the time. Even if people don't verbalize it to you, that's mm-hmm. happening all the time subconsciously to everyone you're around when you're just going about your daily life, doing your thing. People are changing their opinions of blind people.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow, that was like, I just got on my soapbox for a second there. I was just really passionate about yeah. that.
And there's so much more we can say about this topic. Yeah. I think we had other examples that we wanted to talk about yeah. and we had...
there's so many
other, you know, just other things about it, other aspects about it that we wanted to talk about, but I think we should maybe make a part two or something.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think this is where we're gonna wrap it up.
Thank you so much for listening, guys. You can find us at Blind Girl Chat on TikTok and Instagram. You can email us
at blindgirlchat@gmail.com.
thank you to Radio Perkins for letting us record here, and we'll see you guys next week.